This is Lovely Hurling, brought to you in association with Zest Active, your daily super supplement.
I'll get it back to Dan Shanahan. Shanahan in front of the goal, puts it over the bar.
Onto the 13-metre line, somehow he squeezes it in.
Shanahan, a great catch. He's got a man inside of Ken McGrath. Shanahan has the confidence to go for a big, big score.
Hi, and welcome back to week two of Lovely Hurling, All GA's podcast in association with Zest Active. I'm Anthony Nash, and with me always is Dan the Man Shanahan. How are you, Dan?
Good, thanks, mate. Yourself?
We're after getting some great feedback for the last week there on the first podcast, so thanks a million to everyone that has tuned in and given us the positive feedback and kept all the negative ones away, which is great. It's brilliant to be back again. We haven't been dropped down, which is a positive. We made our championship debut. We got fairly good reviews. I think I got about a 5 out of 10 from the newspapers. I think you got a 7 out of 10, but we take those in here for the first week. So basically, this week we're going to have a different kind of a setup than we had last week. So it was just myself and Dan. This time we're going to be joined by one of the greats in hurling. We're also going to review the weekend's hurling as well. But how did you feel the first week with Dan, and what was the feedback down in Waterford, down the Dacia?
Unbelievable, Anthony. What a weekend of hurling. The games were unreal. Sit down here Saturday with me. Box of popcorn there and me can of Monster. And I needed it at the end of the day. But again, it was outstanding hurling.
And any bit of feedback? Any feedback for our own show?
The talking points were brilliant. Do you know, where do you start, Anthony? Where do you start?
Yeah. We'll dive into them now soon enough as well. So as I mentioned there at the top of the show there, we've got a great guest coming on there in a while. You would have heard against him, Dan. I'm a lot younger than the two of you, so I fortunately watched from the sidelines and on the TV. But we've got DJ Carey coming on. DJ did a great interview over the weekend. Obviously, he's one of the greatest hurlers of all time. He's been one of Kilkenny's greats, and debatable whether he's up there to be the greatest of all time. So we're very lucky to have him on the show as well. You heard against him, Dan. You said, was it 98 you played against each other?
98, we would have played a few times. Well, I wouldn't say there was a poor Kilkenny team, but they were there for the taking. And honestly, to this day, I think it was our best chance to win in Ireland, Waterford. And to play against them, I would have met the pre-match. We would have met in the Audrey Hotel at the top of Waterford there, but Glanbia sponsored both counties at the time. So I met myself and DJ, met each other up there at a launch, you know, to promote the match. And to meet the man, to meet a hero of yours growing up, was unbelievable. You know, the same day, in the semi-final, actually the goal they got, won the game, he missed the free, which is pure luck. Like, DJ never missed the frees. I can never say it was a poor Kilkenny team, I never say that, but they were there for the taking and we didn't take them that day, like, you know, and DJ was to the core of that, but he was not to blame for that.
Yeah, I actually was lucky enough to talk to him, to try and get him on the show, like, and the first thing I said to him on the phone was that, like, there was a fan ringing him, like, so when I was growing up, like, to see the skills that he had, like, he got everything. He was so good in the air. And we kind of got talking briefly, and we will do it again later on in the show, but we spoke briefly about, like, you know, players crossing generations and stuff like that, like, you know. And, like, that man could have hurled in any era of the game. Like, he had every skill. He was aerially, he was so strong in the air. His skill, his touching, he was such a, like, great man to get a goal. I kind of half-joked him, and we're going to bring it up later in the show about the penalty technique, because he was firing him into the 13 as well, and he didn't get half the abuse I got. So he must have been a bit cuter than me. But it's just for me to be even on the phone to him. Like, my uncles would have played for Limerick against him, and I was down in my grandmother's house there one day, and she kept all the jerseys belonging to Declan and Mike, you know. And so they were going through all the old ones, and next thing there was a couple of Cork ones, and Tony Sull's jersey was there, and I say a few of the Waterford ones, and next thing number 14, Kilkenny came out of the box, and I just turned around and I said, "Jesus, Harley, DJ Carey's jersey, is it?" He said, "Yeah," and I swear to God, like, Never would I ever think of stealing from my family, but I was so close that day to whipping it and taking it home with me. Like, he was just, like, oh, he was just the man for me. He just, like, he looked class. As much as he was class, he looked class. He had, you know, all the beautiful technique on the field, you know, he had the Cooper helmet. He was just, I'd say if you went onto the field all over the country, there was under 10s or 12s trying to look like DJ. No, until we started trying to pick up the ball and not look like him. But he was a class man. But, like, I'm sure when you met him, even in that then, anytime, like, for me across on the phone, even, he's an absolute gentleman, isn't he?
Yeah, unbelievable. A standout for me is DJ, was his socks up around the knees there and his Ashgard glove, if you remember, the green glove. By God, he needed it, because I was watching a clip this morning where he got a goal against Kilkenny, against Clare in the 1999 All-Ireland final. And he caught the ball and Brian Lowen came out and creased Henry, but DJ managed to get up between him and catch it. Watch it on YouTube. What a goal.
Yeah, well, I think we're going to have to get a few of those clips thrown up on all GA's social media pages after this, because I'd say if you did click into DJ Carey's greatest scores, I'd say it'd be going on for about an hour and a half, I'd say. He was just the style about it all, like, you know, as you said, like, he could just do everything. Like, even the point for me, I think it was against Clare as well, Dan, wasn't it? Where he caught the ball twice and he just strike it off the hurley, like, oh, and it was just, like, just over crossbar height the whole way. Like, his wrists were just absolutely amazing. And that was the other thing I was going to say, actually, like, you said to me last week, you didn't think you'd be on a podcast. Didn't you think you'd be on a podcast with two golfers? Myself and DJ, right, I tell you, we'll have to get you on the course now, next down the water, for then down the Gold Coast, boy, down for a couple of rounds.
No, Anthony, but I would believe it. When I got hold of the year in 07, I got sponsored a set of golf clubs by David Hayes and Dungarvan Golf Club, and I still have them to this day, like, you know, but they were lovely corporates as well. So, but again, I'll have plenty of time for golf, Anthony, in a couple of years' time, like, so I'd enjoy it. I really enjoy the golf, so I do. I like watching on television. I watch the Irish Open there during the weekend. You know, I don't think I'll ever get to play with Rory McIlroy or Tiger Woods the way DJ has, like, you know, but to meet him and to be in the same course as them lads, even to be fantastic. But to play with golf with them lads, I can't wait to come on and ask them what they're really like. You know.
We're lucky enough now to have DJ coming on later in the show. So the next part of the show, we're obviously going to look back at a fantastic weekend of hurling. So the first show we had, we didn't have a lull in hurling then, you know, and you were disappointed after Clare beating Waterford and stuff, but we had, I suppose, two one-sided games. But this weekend is after throwing up an absolute helter-skelter of hurling, and I was lucky enough to probably be at the game of the weekend above in Croke Park with Kilkenny and Wexford, so we might touch on that there in the second part of the show there. But again, thanks a million for tuning in to everyone, and we'll be back there in 1 minute and we'll have a quick chat about the weekend's activities.
You're listening to Lovely Hurling, in association with Zest Active.
Welcome back. So as we said just before the intro there, we have a weekend of hurling to review. Some cracking games. Must say it was actually, I spoke last week and said it was the start of the hurling championship, you know, properly. But this weekend for me was the real start of it then. So we'll go in the order, the way the games went. We'll start off with the Dublin and Galway game, where I suppose Dublin surprised Galway.
Yeah, Anthony. With the Dublin result, I thought we all tipped Galway to win the game, so we did. But I was shocked with the result. I thought Galway were very casual. Look, I'm not going to criticise them. They know it themselves. I thought they were very, very casual on the day. Joe went for an early goal. It didn't happen from two good saves off Nolan. But I just didn't feel like Galway were ever going to win the game. Dublin got on top all over the field. And when Galway panicked, they had to go long into the square. And Dublin had numbers back there. What a display from Matty Kenny and his backroom team. The way they get the tactics right. Their puck outs were brilliant, moving into the middle and spreading and hitting space. And Nolan find them. I thought the old Fox Galway last week in Anthony, the scores they got, Darragh Gregg got two scores from wing back, they were able to score long. Danny Sutcliffe was back to his best. Crummy, you know, Burke, what a half forward. But again, the work rate of the Dublin defence, marking their key Galway players, Anthony, was unreal.
Yeah, I was lucky enough to be over there, and I was actually on the sideline when the final whistle went. And Matty Kenny was coming off the field, and there was a lady in his backroom team went up, and she was absolutely bawling, crying, and giving him a hug. Now, I don't know the relationship between the two, was his family member or as part of the backroom panel or what was it, but like, it was just sheer emotion, the Dublin supporters. So I said it was a lot of like heavy abuse thrown at Matty Kenny throughout the league as well. And even when Ryan O'Dwyer came out last week and commented about how Dublin were playing too systematically and stuff like that, you know. And then like another part of the game, I suppose, that, you know, we have to look at and admire was James Madden's father. Was laid to rest on Friday, and he was willing to tug out and have a starring performance for Dublin on the Saturday as well. So it seemed to be a lot of emotion, and you know, whether it buoyed on Dublin or not. But I'd agree with you when I thought that it wasn't Galway-esque, I'll put it to you that way. Like, I was expecting Galway to come out and power on like they did in the league. Dublin's defence was immense, like, and Alan Owen side and goals had a great game. But Owen O'Donnell, a full back, like, for me, I think he's, you know, if not the best, one of the best. And I thought they shored up the Galway attack there, which is a fair Galway attack, like you have to listen out to the players there already. But like, I suppose now the next thing for Galway and Shane O'Neill is, like, what do they do? Can they pick it back up, go again through the back door? Because they're still one of the All-Ireland contenders for me.
...the match, so I'd say that could be some relation coming down to from the stand. He did an interview after the match, which was a very tough thing to do, but you know, Madden's dad passing away. Like, these things that lads don't see. You all expect players and managers to go and just do it on the day, and supporters don't see these things. I thought it was a great article, a great interview from Matty after the match, and it was a bit emotional, and it was great to see that, like, you know. But again, I just thought Dublin were just awesome on the day. I didn't know, and Joe had an off day, if I'm being honest, which I missed a few frees, missed a shot on Nolan. But again, the work rate of the Dublin backs, man to man. And it was on. One thing I would say, what I noticed about the match, that I don't know if you noticed, there was an umpire there that Johnny Murphy had. I'd say he was in between 20s and 30s, which was brilliant to see. Usually the umpires would be a bit older, and do you know what I'm saying to you? Like, you know, I'm not criticising any older umpire there, right? And just to see a young fella there, he's doing on the Canal Inn there and in the first half, to see him there, and the way the speed of the ball has gone as well. It's great to see a young fella doing the, willing to do the job, like, you know, which is fantastic for the referees and their helpers going forward.
Don't get me started on umpires, though. Anyway, we'll move on to the Kilkenny Wexford game. All right, next up, and again, that was the reason I was there. I was lucky enough to be doing co-commentary on it, and by God, was my job easy, because the game just didn't stop giving from minute one to the very last attack of the game, where Hawkeye came back to save Kilkenny. And I actually saw Owen Murphy, who was a funny character, put up a tweet, was it yesterday or the day before, saying like Hawkeye and a few, you know, the emojis with the heart eyes and stuff like that, just because it kind of saved his bacon a little bit. Like, you know, he was already after saving 2 points in the first half, and I'd say, my God, was he relieved to have given away a point at the stage of the game. But that was, but look, like, again, I'll let you at it here in a sec, but my God, what a game. Like, it was just end to end stuff, and it wasn't as if it was, you know, a challenge match feel, because there was people running past each other. There was physicality, there was players cramping up. The catching in the game was just, I haven't seen that many catches in a year, let alone one game. And I just thought, you know what, for both sides, I just thought that there was no one could be criticised for anything on the field.
It had everything, as you said. It had everything. I really enjoyed the game. I have to take my hats off. But I always said it last week, that Davey was always a trump card. You know, they were fantastic. Wexford were fantastic. The energy levels they bring to the game, the way Davey wants to play the game, the running game, off the shoulder, for 70 minutes to do that is unbelievable, Anthony. But again, credit Kilkenny, the way they stuck with it. They stuck with everything in the game. I said, if the game was on a leash, I'd say it could have been a different game. Like, you know, Owen Murphy could have been caught. He'd have been in big trouble. Like, you know, but I have to credit the way Wexford went at him. And yet they were down a point at half time. That'll tell you how good Kilkenny stuck with it. So they did. But again, after that, into the second half, there was a passage of play there where Fergal Hogan, to his credit, left to go. And I think you commented on yourself, they hit him 3 or 4 times, belts.
Absolutely.
Or maybe a month ago, they would have blown for it, but he left it off, and was a fantastic sequence of play, the way he left the goal. And I credit him for that, because sometimes we're good enough to criticise the referees, but I credit Fergal for that, the way he left the goal and really handled the game, because it was a physical game. Great catching in the air, had everything. Big Walter coming on, getting the goal. I think the Kilkenny subs contributed 1-9, but the Wexford subs didn't contribute much with respect. That's the running game. They lost key players, Wexford. It's hard to believe, Anthony, that Wexford won all this team, knowing the game they played. When you see TJ lasting the whole lot, like, you know, it's unbelievable. Credit to him, and credit to Kilkenny fitness guru, whoever they have down there doing the fitness training, Michael Comfort. Credit him, because I think I saw Paddy Grinch cramping, and maybe Paddy Deegan, and apart from that, I think the rest of them weren't cramping as much as the Wexford has. But again, hats off to the two teams that were involved last weekend, Andy. What a game of hurling.
Moving on into Saturday night, I suppose I'm going to let you feel this one then, because I don't know, it was like, for a Cork person, you're kind of looking at it and you're saying, was it our best opportunity to beat Limerick? I didn't feel that Limerick were hitting the highest points at times. I thought Cork were well on top in the first half. Unlucky with the penalty. That was a great save from Nicky Quaid, like, you know. And just to even go back to that, like, and I'll let you feel the game then as well, because you'll be better from the outside looking at it. Down here, there's been kind of like mixed reviews about Patrick Horgan's performance. You know, like, people are saying that, you know, half of them are saying that, ah, look, he's justified a bad game and whatever like that. Like I just want to, and it's not because of our friendship with him. That man has carried Cork, and I mean carried Cork for the last 10 years. Even when I was on the field, like, he was carrying me. He took pressure of the world on his shoulders. And it doesn't bother him. That's the best thing. He's actually one of the most mentally strong people I've ever come across. But then I also see in social media, people were saying that, oh, he's declining. He's this, that. It's one game of hurling. He missed a couple of frees. It was a great save from Nicky Quaid, you know. And the problem we had on Saturday night that I felt, and it's not a Jesus, no slight of any of the other players, but when Patrick didn't hit the heights he normally hits, he needed a bit of help. You know, he needed someone to grab the game by the scruff of the neck for 5 or 10 minutes, like, you know, like other counties do. And and maybe step up and say, right, you take a break for 10 minutes and I'll do this, and then you come into it, you know. And I thought Cork were unlucky by losing Shamey Harran as well with injury and stuff, but I just felt, and again, it'd be interested to see what you think, Cork's best chance of beating Limerick, and where it goes from there, I know, is the next thing.
Absolutely, in the middle of the second half, they couldn't. Limerick kept Cork at arms, but again, go back to Hoggy here. As you said, he's carried Cork for a number of years. A number of years. What a player. He's still one of the best, and he's always be the best. And I hope the Cork people realise when he'll be gone, whether it's 2 or 3 years' time, what they'll miss, because he's an awesome player to have on the team. He's been carried Cork, his free taking has been immense. He had an off day. But who doesn't have an off day? Like, you know, he has an off day. I guarantee you, he doesn't need to be told he had an off day.
Absolutely.
Because he'll know himself. He'll get that right the next day. But I just thought Cork, to their credit, took the game to Limerick earlier on. Took the game to Limerick. And I saw that in line with Kingston. He was really off the battle. He was very animated on the line, which I thought was brilliant. He wanted to win the battle there, and I think he set the tone for the players too. But again, Anthony, I thought Limerick were there for the taking. Do you know, to Hoggy's credit, I think, do you know, listening, when I see the penalty again, that should he have went down to Nash's, or sorry, Quaid's opposite side. Do you know what I'm saying? He knew as a goalkeeper, like, he pokes from the left and he's comfortable on the left. But Hoggy hit a sweep. Nicky Quaid read it brilliantly. But again, anyway, he couldn't. I thought Cork, to their credit, did everything right. Won a lot of key battles with O'Mahony on Hegarty, you know, I don't know, on Galan. So they had a lot of positive for Cork. Downfall, as you said there, Hoggy had no lad to take him out of jail up front. There was no one stood up there and really grabbed him. Pat Young O'Connor got 3 points. Jack O'Connor looked dangerous on the ball. And when he got it, you know, didn't work out for young Callan on the wing. Robbie O'Flynn was, for me, too deep at some times back in his own half-back line. You know, but he's not as dangerous. But the sucker punch for the Cork lads with 2 goals just before half-time. You know, a deflected shot. You know, really unfortunate on the keeper. Who was questioned as well. There was a lot of big boost to Phil, let's be honest about it. Big boost to Phil. One or two puckles went astray. But again, he stuck with it. But a deflected shot, not in the book. But the way Hayes took a chance and kept going for the second goal will upset Cork a bit, like, you know that. Why wasn't he followed? He's been doing it for the last 2 years since he's been winking back, taking the chance. Did it myself, and I'm blowing my own trumpet here. But I always took a chance. I mean, you take a chance, you get the rewards, and Coyle Hayes did it. Really, really, it's an uphill battle for Cork after that. They were leading with 30-something minutes on the clock, and they went 5 or 6 points down a half in the 35th or 38 minutes. But a lot of positives from Cork County, so there was a lot of positives.
So the last one of the weekend, unfortunately, I'm not so sure that the hurling is going to dictate our next 5 minute conversation about this match on Sunday. Now, again, look, we're just after commenting about the abuse that Patrick Horgan may have seen and heard and stuff like that, like, and, you know, that people go out and give up the time of their lives. Referees are the same, I suppose. You know, so look, it's not a thing that we're going to be here people bashing or anything like that as well, but Brian Lohan's interview after the game, I know me and you spoke about this before, how class he was and how, you know, how you could see he was seething inside and boiling inside. But I suppose that one decision on Sunday then, like, summed up, like, you know, it just took the tone of the game and just set the game for the rest of it. And I think there was a 2-4 swing on top of you know, on top of it then as well. But the penalty then, you know, like, how was that a penalty?
Look, I don't think that was a penalty either, but again, the one last week, like players are amateurs, referees are amateurs. I thought James Owen looks the fittest of the referees. He's up with the play. He's a great referee. I just thought he made a rash decision that day, and you know, didn't take the penalty. So he wasn't the killing thing about it. I think the Clare had lost position. Flanagan was kind of blocked, and McCarthy had a game with the Flanagan. He was blocked, and this made McCarthy to go with Jake Morris. My point being that they had possession, Clare. Like, you know, they shouldn't have been in that position anyway. But again, like, you know, McCarthy came in, fouled him, granted free over the bar. But to send him off with 10 minutes to go, was 10 minutes in, then, and to get a penalty and score the penalty, it must be demoralising for Clare. I was absolutely sick watching it, I'll be honest with you. And look, we missed the other side. The rules are the rules. He was fouled in the 20-metre line. He was heading for goal. I don't think he'd got. I don't think Bolt would have got there with the speed, with the lads there.
But for me in the penalty then, like, and maybe I'm reading the rules incorrectly, is a goal scoring chance when you're the last defender, okay? Like, there was a funny tweet when it was over the weekend, and I shared it with you in the group there about that he was closer to the Ennis Road than he was to the goals. You know what I mean? Like, so, and like, if you look, I think the cameras just lost the square at the time, but just beforehand, you could see that there was at least two defenders marking two men inside. And you know yourself, like, if Morris had picked that ball and went for goal, the Clare defenders would naturally, with their setup, have come towards him. He'd have had to have beaten at least two or three Clare men himself. Now, I know you could dictate that he might have had an overlap and he was going to play a pass across like Tipperary normally do, but that wasn't a certain goal-scoring opportunity from where he was. I get the rule, don't get me wrong, and the rule is the rule and it's there for a good reason. But, like, there was no way in my mind that if, like, what I'm afraid of is, if there's another one like that, like, that cannot be a penalty in the future for me. It's not even next nor near a penalty. It might be a revisit to the rule where it's just when he's one on one and he's bearing down on goal.
What happens if it happens again? Do you know? Do they make a decision? Do they go back to, do the GA say that it has to be inside, it has to be one on one, it has to be a cynical foul? That's that to me. And the big thing for me, and you might laugh at me, is the club. When you go back playing with your club, and you will go back now, will these club referees, how are they going to interpret it? This rule, do you know, it's a big one to call, and I feel I do, and I 100% agree with what you're saying. Clare are trained like animals and put up a lot of shit up there in Clare, and Brian Lowen has, and to be treated like that by a decision like that, I just can't believe it.
Yeah, like the one thing for me, like, is that, like we talk about a player making a mistake, right? A player has to make a mistake. Like, you know yourself, Dan, you have got a millisecond to decide what you're going to do, all right? Blow the whistle. Walk to your linesman. Have a chat with him. I think I'm giving a penalty here. What do you think? And if the two of them concur and come up with a decision that it's a penalty, I think they're all mic'd up. He could talk to the other linesman. Then come to the decision and say, it's a penalty. And if all three come to that decision, well, then all three have come to that decision. And we can't say James Owens did this, that, and the other. But one thing I'd love to see, and I know it was brought up before about like referees doing interviews after. Look, I'm not for that. What I am for is a spokesperson from the GAA's refereeing council or whoever it would be, Willie Barr or Willie, whoever, has come out and say, this is the reason the penalty was given. Now Brian Lohan can sit down and justify the decision that was being made. Like, come here, does it affect me in the slightest? It does not, right? But Brian Lohan's life has been dictated by this one decision where he should be preparing for a Munster final against Limerick, and they had to fancy their chances there. Now, as you said, they could potentially meet Wexford or Galway, and knowing the way the draws have gone the last few years, it's going to be Lohan and Davey again, like, you know. So it was just that's the thing for me, and that's the disappointment. Someone should come out and just back up James Owens, or else say that he made a mistake, one or the other. But like, the silence is what I don't like, because like, Brian Lohan's down, and like, he was asked in the interview after, like, you know, what was it? He said, sure, I don't know. Like, he hasn't been told anything.
Jamie Lawler asked him. He asked him brilliantly. He answered him brilliantly. I felt for that man because, you know, he's under pressure up there. You know, he Clare are playing a brand of
hurling. Definitely, yeah.
He's took him a while to get there. They're playing for each other. You know, and I feel sorry for that man, that decision was made like that. Like, you know, I'm not going to sit here and knock James Owens for making that decision. But I will sit here and ask, call out the GA. Who does make the decisions? Who tells the referees how? To about have these fellas played the game? I don't think they have any. I'm going to be honest with you. And we're here to be honest. I don't think these fellas that are making these decisions have played the game. That have been put in this position. Jake Morris gets a man grants a free and maybe a yellow card, but no penalty. You know, and you know, we have to as players. I don't think the players have been consulted either.
Absolutely.
Let's be honest about it. The GPA and the GA should be meeting halfway, get together. This has to be changed. Shaking it. And did go back to the referees. Are you bringing the referees with the GPA and the GEA? Because I don't think the players have been consulted with these decisions. And at the end of the day, Andy, it could be, God forbid, someone get a serious knee injury next year, crucial, even gone another year, gone. Slowly the years are tipping away. And we had it in 18 with Austin's goal. And I was fit to be tied down after the match, Andy. But I was livid, absolutely effing livid with that decision that changed our season. We didn't beat Cork in the last game. It changed our season. We gave Tip the momentum. They got a draw. We had to beat Cork. We didn't beat. If we'd won that game, I'm not saying because you're over there, we might have beaten. But it made our decision, which was an awful decision from an umpire who was grinning, going off the field after it. And I was fit to be tied, as McNan said in his paper, he'd have served a suspension. I was close to getting a suspension because I was livid. Because lads put their lives on effing hold to go out there and dictate. They can't go to a wedding and drink. They can't do that. You know yourself. And for a decision to be, and I'll point the finger at James Owens. He's going by the rules. But I think they seriously have to look at these decisions because and consult the players, because the players are putting the people into the stands. So they are.
It's a pity that we just spent the last 10 minutes talking about one decision rather than the Tipperary and Clare game and where they're going to go in the future. But look, I suppose we'll leave it at that one and we might come back and hopefully Jay might come out with something, you know. And in fairness, like, it's just, and again, we're not pointing blame at anybody and we're not trying to kind of, you know, I suppose not to Jay either or anything like that, but it's just we would like to see that there was consistency for the players, as you said. Like, up after the next break is going to be the one and only DJ Carey, so please tune back in.
You're listening to Lovely Hurling, in association with Zest Active.
Okay, welcome back to the show. We've got the one and only DJ Carey joining me. So I've been joined by two serious forwards and Dan has been joined by two serious golfers. So we were saying earlier, DJ, we were trying to get Dan on the golf course, but he said he got sponsored a set of clubs before, but they're after going, they're growing cobwebs at this stage. So look, it's thanks a million, first of all, for joining us, DJ. Like, I spoke to you on the phone and I was just saying that, like, not only is it a pleasure for me to speak to you on the phone, but have you on the show, because I was one of your admirers from afar when I was growing up and tried to emulate you. I even got an Ashguard at one stage, but my skills didn't replicate yours. So it was great to have you on the show. You had a lovely game of golf last weekend.
I had, sure. Look, Anthony, I suppose myself and Henry were doing a little bit of practicing together because Henry has only just taken up golf and he had got an invite to the Irish Open last year in Mount Juliet, but it wasn't in Mount Juliet, obviously. So so we're doing a bit, expecting to play with each other. And then over the weekend, the names of the groups came out and I saw I was down with Gerry McIlroy, Rory's dad, and Johnny Sexton. So I said, ooh, maybe it's one time I wouldn't mind not playing with Henry if I was to get Rory. So so then it came out in the next couple of days that I was playing with Rory. So that was pretty exciting.
And was it always a love for you, DJ? Did you play a lot when you were like hurling? Did you take a break from hurling, like on a midweek and go for a few holes, or like was it just something you picked up when you retired properly? Or and was it like obviously the handball as well, like was a major part of your life? And I said to you yesterday, your infamous hand passing skills, like were obviously created inside in the course as well. Like was there other sports, and was there reasons for other sports, or was it just
I just loved sport. I could pick up, you know, playing soccer regularly. And like, I suppose for me, speed was the thing. Now, offside, I couldn't get the offside thing at all. I was offside more often in soccer than I was, you know. But if a fella was to put a ball in over a group, I was very quick onto it. Now, I wasn't the best at maybe... I would have scored lots of goals, but I'd miss twice as many because, you know, in Kilkenny, our footwork mightn't be the absolute best. But I just loved just sport in general. And I was very lucky, you know, that... And like... I don't know about you guys, but if I picked up a rugby ball and I wanted to throw it, I'd want to throw it right. Do you know what I mean? You'd want to be able to roll the hands over. You know, an American football, like there was one stage there, you're too young, Anthony, the two you're too young, but American football became very big in Ireland when they started showing the Super Bowl first, you know, and you wanted to throw that ball perfectly and, you know, up in the air, but the ball spinning the right way. So I just loved that sort of... you know, whether I was good at something or not, I wanted to look good doing it, if that makes sense. And it was the same with golf. Many people would say, why didn't you use the hurling grip? Why didn't you use, you know, how come? I can tell you, and this is not a boast, it's just a fact, I could swing a club left-handed much easier than I could swing a club. I'd miss a ball completely cack-handed. But yet, I could actually swing the club. And if you gave me half an hour on the range, I could hit the ball pretty decently left-handed, but not cack-handed at all. I would find that really, really awkward. So it's kind of, when you look at someone, you try to emulate what to do, even playing darts, and I was no good at darts or anything. But you look at the very Eric Bristow I grew up with when darts was very popular on, when you only had two channels, and you were watching darts, the World Channel. Look at him, then you wanted to emulate how he did it.
Yeah, that's sort of premier, isn't that the reason I went down and bought the Ashguard and the Cooper helmet? I wanted to emulate you. I was going around, except I hadn't the pace and I hadn't the guile either. I used to try and catch the ball and drive it.
I when I want to play something, I want to win it. You know, I want to be the best I can at it. You know, as I said, I'm coming off 18, it's in, if there's higher than golf. But again, you have to believe that you're able to hit the ball or throw the American football without it wobbling, the spin on the rugby ball or that soccer ball you kick. You have to be wanted and given the chance to do it and believe in yourself. Like, you know, and I'm a firm believer of that. Like, you know, that everyone has an opportunity there. I saw something lately there, Greco wrestling. He was... Gardner was his name. He suffered so many things in his life, but he kept coming back, kept coming back. And it's a good documentary. It's worth watching, man. But again, it's just so right, DJ. Please, God, we get together down here in Waterford or Cork. Or, at Nova computers, I'm no good at, but face-to-face, I may be fairly handy at, like, you know what I mean?
Going back on to hurling, so, like, we had a conversation beforehand that I had with Dan last week as well, and I let the two of you take this because Dan asked me did I miss it to county hurling in the top 11. I said, Jesus, I didn't. And Dan said he'd have given anything to go running out on the Sunday, the championship, and you said the same. So you might have a quick chat about that and just how you feel about it, because you actually both carry the same thoughts behind it. Like, Dan, you were saying that you'd have burst out the tunnel, and he said, DJ, he'd have ran 20 laps rather than come on one of these podcasts with computers even. Like, you know, that's how much he hates technology.
No, it's just something in me, DJ, that when I saw this warm weather last week, it was unbelievable. Lads coming out the tunnel. He was always with lads coming out the tunnel. Soak it in. Get on with the game. There's something I miss all big time, like, you know, since I retired in 2010. So would you have the same feeling about that, or did you miss it at all after? Like, you know, you retired, you came back. How do you feel about it now? Would you be able to play now, DJ? No doubt about you would.
Well, Dan, to this day, I would love to be playing, love to have been running out against Wexford. I mean, we had a great rivalry with Wexford over the years. Now, I kind of, as I said, Anthony, before you, when you were having fierce difficulty coming on to us there with the technology, I was just saying that, you know, like, I would have given up my own club maybe at 36, 37, and people say, well, just time enough. But, you know, I don't think anyone should give up the game that if you love it until such time that you can't do it anymore, because there's long enough when you can't do it. Even a few years ago when Sean, my eldest fella, became 17 or he could play adult hurling, I went back for a couple of years and played it and really, really enjoyed it, playing special junior hurling and really got a grow back for it. But I think, you know, like if you could do it, I'd love to be running out in Croke Park or Nolan Park or any park for that matter, still playing it. And I think sometimes we make decisions, and sometimes, as you know, in the GAA, your own can be more critical than anyone, and you say, oh, you know, I don't want to play anymore, and then you give it up. And I would still love to be doing it now. It can't, like, it's not possible with the way the game has gone, and you know, you couldn't play at that level. But I'd love, like, we Kilkenny played a couple of exhibition games. We were asked to play a couple of exhibition games over the last few years. I think we played Waterford in a game, and most of our retired lads just loved to play, and it turned out that we had a phenomenal team that was on the field. You know, we played, I think, another game, but, you know, it died a death as well. It died a death because, you know, we're not insured to hurl. You know, one of the games that we played in, I think it was against yourselves down in Kilmacow, as in Waterford and Kilkenny. But the problem actually trying to get the game on, because fellas weren't insured to play, you know. And I'd love to run out and jog around and, you know, in a few exhibition games every now and again. Would love to still pick up the hurl, but it's not possible, because once you're gone, you're gone.
We actually hammered us that day as well. DJ below Kilmacow, Kilkenny did hammer Waterford. But it's great to meet the people, DJ, that you wouldn't have met over the years again at these charity games, like, you know. And to meet Tommy Welch, yourself and all the lads, like, you know, there's more of a get-together than an exhibition, if you know what I'm saying to you. Like, the crack we had after, the crack during the game. I know we got hammered Waterford, but the willingness of Kilkenny wanting to win all the time was always there. Like, you know, you admire that. But just going back, I do a bit of club hurling myself. I still play a bit of club hurling, if it is more. I went back training last week and I did the Bronco test. I don't ever do the Bronco test. I couldn't walk for 2 days after.
No, I didn't do the Bronco.
You know, but you know what I mean. But I enjoy doing it. Like, you know, so it's just tough going.
Yeah, I did as well, Dan. I feel your pain. That's very good. Come here, we have to leave it there for this part of the show. So we'll be tuning back in a while and we'll get DJ's thoughts about Kilkenny hurling, especially with having his own involved and also his state of the game at the current period. Tune in and see you back in a minute. All right, so welcome back to the show again. We're here again with two of the greatest forwards I've ever played the game. Two fellas I wouldn't like to play against, unfortunately. DJ, I played against Dan in my first game And he didn't take any sympathy in me. They had five goals rattled past me before I knew where I was. So, but we also had a chat there beforehand, and I spoke to Dan, and Dan actually said that he played against you a few times as well. So, Dan, what was it like stepping on the field with that Kilkenny team and DJ? Because I think you mentioned the game, was it 98 or something?
But we played league games against each other. But, you know, I would have met DJ, the honour of meeting DJ, but with the launch, I think the Audrey DJ, if you remember up there, 98, Glanbia sponsored both of us at the time, and we missed, and going into the semi-final, like, you know, and we thought we had a great chance going in the same day against Kilkenny. Like, you know, I didn't think it was the best Kilkenny team that was playing at the time. If, with respect, I thought there was obviously better teams came along after. But you beat us the same thing. If you remember, you hit the free and Niall Maloney pulled it and went into the bottom corner and finished us. But such characters, Liam Keown, I would have marked Liam Keown. And Kenneth Brennan was around there at the time. Philly Lack and great hullers. Pat O'Neill was full back, I think, at the time again. Like, you know, so that was my first recognition of meeting this great man here on the other side of that. The computer here and DJ at the launch. But again, you know, it was a big disappointment for us. We thought we had a great chance that your DJ to push on and win the All-Ireland, but awfully came through the back door and won it. Like, you know, but that was my first real recollection of meeting yourself.
Yeah, I think at that time, Dan, I think probably, like, Waterford were very unlucky. I don't know what it was a belief, what it was. Yeah, we got a very fortunate goal. I remember I kind of had a bit of an off day on the breeze, and in the second half, the game was nip and tuck, and it was about 40 yards, 50 yards out maybe, and mishit this free that went low and hard. But I think Niall Maloney maybe pulled on it or something and it went into the back of the net, and that was the difference in it. But like, we had colossal matches at that time. Waterford, for whatever reason, they just couldn't get over the line. And like, we, Offaly were the exception at the time, because Offaly, I don't know what it was with them, but they had such a belief in themselves that they were able to beat Kilkenny. They were able to beat anyone on a day. And I think they won three or four All-Irelands. And Waterford were probably as good, if not the best team in the country at the time. And like, that's not blowing your own trumpet. You know that yourselves. You came through Munster. But for some reason, you just weren't able to take that final semi. If you beat Kilkenny in a semi-final, you could have won it. Do you know what I mean? If and whether there was pressure. And again, I don't know, because I always even heard it about myself. Oh, on the big day, you couldn't perform. We never, every day that you went out was a big day. But it is just whatever happened on that day, particularly, I don't know how many semi-finals you guys played in, but you were there or thereabouts on a lot of occasions and just couldn't get over the line. And I think if Waterford had to get over the line at that time, which you had a good enough team to do, there was probably three, four, five All-Irelands in you at this stage.
Yeah, it's a great point, DJ. I just think we had great players, but we never played well as a team on the day. We did against Cork with respect, Anthony, in Munster Championship, but we never pushed on in our early semi-finals. Like, you know, I can remember, I think Willie O'Connor got mad at the match that day in 19. Like, you know, but again, it wasn't just lack of effort or a bit. I just think of ourselves at the forward and just didn't click on the day some days. Like, you know, if you have to win our Ireland, you know yourself, you have to be able to beat the Kilkennys in semi-finals. The fact that the match was awfully in the semi-final and the final, and the boys would have beaten under 21 a few years previous, I think it would give us a better chance to win that All-Ireland again. But again, like, you know, as you said, I mentioned some players there that they're awesome Kilkenny servants, like, over the years, like, you know, and the thrill of playing Kilkenny, the thrill of meeting even, and the old style jerseys up in the Ardrie compared to what they have now, it's mind-boggling. But again, the way the game has changed, the strength and condition of the players is phenomenal. Like, you know, it's the game has changed so much since I started it in 97, 98 there, like, you know, and to what they have now, like, you know, and but the slitters are, they're no more cuff balls anymore.
She's down the water for forward line were willing to click when I was in goals, you fecker, you. We discussed, Jesus Christ, I got asked a question about Cork forwards there last week, and next thing I was saying, like, they didn't get enough goals. They got him in training. Waterford got him in championship, and you're telling me you didn't click at times. It must be me. I must have been absolutely horrendous, because I had pains in my back for a week after after picking the five goals out of the net against Waterford in my debut. Jesus Christ. So don't tell me you're for Waterford forward and didn't click at times. You didn't take any pity in me that day. And I was trying to start out a little career for myself. But linking in that there, DJ, like, you know, I was telling the lads here earlier that, like, I was lucky enough to be doing a bit of commentary on the Wexford Kilkenny game at the weekend, and you might discuss about your, like, how proud you were seeing your son coming on as well. But like, all those Kilkenny players walked past me, and Wexford as well, now, like, and the Dublin players were around me, and like, to see, and I comped on Adrian Mullen, like, who on the field wouldn't look like he's a 6'5" or 6'6" lad, you know, he looks to be there for his skill. But he walked past me, like, and to see the physical condition of those Kilkenny players, like, and to see that. But like, to kind of link it in, like compared to, are you happy with where the game is at the moment? Do you think it's in a good place, or are there any of the rule changes that, you know, we obviously spoke about the big one at the weekend earlier, anything like that that you're afraid of, and do you feel that, like, are there changes being made for the sake of making changes?
To me, the game, lads are fitter, they're stronger, they're more skillful, better strikers of the ball. And maybe we were, in our day, we were a step ahead of the fellas previous, and maybe the fellas previous to us were a step ahead, you know. But the game of that era was always brilliant. So whether it was the 40s, the 50s, the 60s, it was always brilliant in that era, but it's coming on a lot. Where I fear for the game is that whoever is looking at making rule changes, I fear for it, because, like, you know, we're now looking at a game where there's 30, 40, 50 frees in a game, and we have stronger and fitter guys playing the game. So now, I would hate to be a defender. I'd hate to be a guy in a full back line at the moment, because there's so much open space, and all it takes now is a forward to run at you or put a ball in a hurl, and there's one hand, or there's some sort of a tackle goes in. Whereas I actually think, and Fergal Horgan, in my opinion, is an excellent referee, and I thought he refereed the game excellently last Saturday. Now, maybe someone in Wexford will turn around and say, oh, well, you were saying that because Kilkenny won. It's not. There was frees given against Kilkenny I thought were poor. I was right under one myself. And when I say poor, I think it was Hugh Lawler came in and he blocked, or he maybe chopped down on Rory O'Connor. But he actually didn't chop. He won the ball, and in the follow-through, the ball came down on the hurt. That's a free. But we accept that as players. When we're playing, we accept the odd mistake. But we like the way the game is flowing. Now you'll hear the argument, well, if it's a free, it's a free. That's the way, it's as simple as that. But the game is so fast. There's so many, you know, there's flicking, there's blocking, there's a whole lot going on in our game that in actual fact, there's no need for frees. Let the game go. Let the game actually flow. The ball has developed. And I'm not one that buys into the ball that's going too far. I think it is going a long way. I think it is going further than it was before. But if we're going to improve your defending, you know, you don't need, maybe we don't need to look at the ball and say it's going too far. Yes, it's going a long ways. But then if a half back line can put the ball over the bar, well, why are you leaving the half back free? If a full back can come out 45 yards from a puck out and he can run 45 yards with it and then look at the post and put it over, well, why are you leaving the full back free or the corner back? You know, they're all brilliant strikers of the ball now, and every team can actually do it. So it's a team now. Limerick are the big team at the moment, in my opinion. They're brilliant. They have the game down to a T, the game that they want come down to a T. But you know, Anthony, it was slightly before your time in the Cork goal. Cork had to develop a game to beat Kilkenny, and they did. And they developed a running game. Kilkenny had to turn around a few years later and develop a game to come up against Cork, which was to stop that running, right? Then the game developed on again, and it developed on again to the point now where Limerick have it and they're specialising in it. So whoever is going to win or beat Limerick on a consistent basis has to come up with a game that's going to counteract that, and that will develop, and then they'll have a dominance for a couple of years, and then it'll develop. So we're developing all the time. And I think the, you know, the off-the-shoulder movement, you when you were striking a ball to the Cork guys and you were able to pinpoint one, a puck out 80, 90 yards to a guy on the run and put it, and he didn't have to break stride. That is actually developing the game brilliant to the point where the fitness levels are just gone through the roof. And like, if you were, and people have commented, you'd want to be a thoroughbred horse to be able to play like the way Wexford played last Saturday with the amount run. But it's phenomenal to see. I mean, I was almost at pitch level looking at the cornerbacks tearing up the wing. And if they didn't get it, someone, it could have been even a full forward, was running back to the full back line to take a puck out, to develop it out the field, to put it to Rory O'Connor on the run. And it's just actually mind-blowing to see that the speed of the game. And everyone look at it, oh, go back to one-on-one, and when you're picked at 14, that's where you pick. Forget that. We want to see the game, in my opinion, we want to see the game being played brilliantly. We want to see the game being played so fast. Yes, it was 137 to 129, and other teams are in the same boat. But it's absolutely brilliant because it's so exciting. Now, if you want to stop the 137, learn to defend it better. You know, don't look at the ball. Don't look at the hurl. Don't look at the jersey, because lads look so muscly in a jersey. Look at the way, how do we defend the game better? How do we attack better? How do we score a goal now? You know, that's what you want to be able to come up with. And that's what modern managers, maybe, you know, the guys who are long. When I played, Ollie Welsh was a manager, and other guys were mad. Brian was manager in my time as well. Now it's gone to the stage where the coaches are almost the most important guys, because they're now trying to develop the style of play. The manager has to agree to that and put it in play. And he has to, you know, he has to either stand by the sword or die by the sword of the way the game is playing. And you know, like, people have criticized maybe Brian as to, you know, does he want to relinquish the way Kilkenny style of hurling? And no, he doesn't. Is he right? Probably. But unfortunately, the way the game is going, it's developing and developing. And you can see it in the way Kilkenny are beginning to play. Yes, we must go with it, or we're going to be left behind. And Kilkenny have good hurlers. You know, there's no doubt about it. But so have Tip, so have Galway, so have Dublin, so have Wexford, so have Cork, so have Waterford. Every team have absolutely brilliant hurlers now. It's the way the game is going. You know, we saw it with Galway, huge men. You know, that was they got their All-Ireland. But Limerick then came with big men and a different style of hurling. So, you know, I love the way the game is going. I love the way it's developing. But as I say, if you want to concede less scores, we need to learn how to defend better.
I'd agree 1,000% with you there. Like, the big thing, before we go on to your son coming on and if a cracking game as well, the last day, is that, look, if it doesn't need to be fixed, leave it alone. So the rule changes and stuff like that that led to the penalty incident last weekend, the slitter changes, everything like that. That, as you said, look, if teams cope with tactics, and I'm a believer, if they did decide to make the ball heavier and you had less scores, we'd end up giving out about not having enough scores in the game. So I think absolutely leave it alone.
When Kilkenny were at the top, and let's say I was one of the main players in Kilkenny, and I couldn't come out, or Brian Cody couldn't come out and say, look, I'm fearful here the way the game is going because the rules are changing, right? John Kiely can't really come out. Now, maybe John could, in the sense that he'd be a very universal guy. He can't come out, because when you're at the top and you come out, the begrudger will come out and say, oh, you don't want to change because you're dirty, or you're living on the edge, or, you know, you're doing this. But it's not. When like, hurling people, in my opinion, know they're hurling and know the way it's going. Hurling people want to see a physical game. You know, if there's dirt in a game, you know what? There's a red card there for it. Use the red card. But we don't want to see the physical part taken out of our game whatsoever. We need, because it's a small community at the top. You know, there's not many teams that are up there at the top level. And I don't understand how a penalty can be given for a sideline. I don't understand where are all the other interpretations going to come from. I don't think we need it. I would agree Owen Murphy got the yellow card properly. That was a cynical tackle. That was the rule that it was brought in for. I don't think it was brought in for a guy making a tackle on a sideline. I don't see where the goal was. And this is not having a go at Tipperary. People think, oh, you know, you don't like Tipperary. It's not. It's actually looking to see, right, there's a huge controversy in this new rule now. This needs to be defined much better than what it is. So don't be letting the game, we don't want to see that physical part. We don't want to see too many rule changes. As I say, if there's dirt in the game, if there's illegalities in the game, that's fine. Let's get rid of them. No need for it. But, you know, we don't need to see it going in such a way that there's tackles can't be made, a good shoulder can't be made. You know, and as I say, Fergal Horgan refereed a game. There was plenty of shoulders, there was plenty of pushing. But lads got up and got on with it. It was as simple as that. When the whistle wasn't being blown, they got up and got on with it. And I think that's what makes for a much more exciting game.
Come here, just to wrap up finally there. Proud moment for you at the weekend?
Yeah. Look, Mikey is on the Kilkenny panel, so you're always hoping as a parent, you know, your Owen will get some time, and then obviously he came on with in extra time and got a point. So he's on the panel now for 3 years there. I was a selector with Kilkenny last year and just felt that it was uncomfortable being a selector. And I had the greatest time for Brian and all the lads, but it was unfair of me being there on Mikey, and it was unfair, you know, because you can never bring him into the thing. So it was fair for me to step aside and let him have his career. So it's great for him. He was delighted. 3 years on the panel, senior debut, championship debut was made, and probably wouldn't have been made it only the fact that it went extra time, and then he came on and did okay in the game. So hopefully he'll get more time in Kilkenny. We'll keep going a little further.
Great stuff. Come here. Thanks a million for coming on the show, DJ. The one thing about it, like, I suppose he's after growing up with an extra little bit of pressure having one of the all-time greats as a father, but it was great to see him coming on and do well, and especially in such a good game that you left that nice memory. But thanks again for joining us, DJ. It's just been a pleasure for me to sit down with not many people to keep me silent for this long, but to be able to listen to the stories about the golf and about the hurling. And look, thanks a million for the invitation up to Mount Juliet as well. I really appreciate that.
Anytime at all. Great stuff. And very best of luck with it.
Thanks very much. Thanks, DJ.
Tell Dan he needs... I can't hear him there now, but tell Dan he needs to polish the clubs. He can't have cobwebs coming to Mount Juliet.
Very good.
Get it back to Dan Shanahan. Shanahan in front of the goal, puts it over the bar. Anthony Nashton. Onto the 13-metre line.